This is the Afternoon Drive Podcast with Philip and Skip from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
4:05 on your Afternoon Drive. This is News Talk 580 and 105.9 KMJ, Philip and Skip. Worldwide, you can listen to KMJNow.com. You can watch the show on Twitch. Just search for Drive KMJ. Well, we've got an answer. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody, and it's certainly not a happy thing, but it is a final and formal conclusion. The Laundry family attorney announcing earlier today that the autopsy results are in, and Brian Laundry died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head.
Yeah, as a recap, remains were found in the wetland area of Florida's Carlton Reserve on October 20th. They were identified just one day later on the 21st. At the time, there was also clothing and a notebook that had been found. Now, they were able to analyze his remains using dental comparison, skeletal reconstruction, and DNA analysis to confirm that identity. But he had been missing for about a month and a week by that point.
Yeah.
But the family may have had contact with him during that time. I mean, there is some interesting stuff in the background there, but I want to talk about Brian specifically. Give me your thoughts. What do you think?
I think that whatever transpired with Gabby was too much for him to bear. Whether it was intentional in a moment of passion, whether it was accidental in whatever circumstance you could accidentally strangle somebody. Brian Laundry couldn't live with what happened. And I think that in time we will learn that the crime was committed. He panicked. He came home, realized that there wasn't going to be a solution. And then I'm going to say without his family's direct knowledge, made a decision to take his own life. And that we may, depending upon the condition of the materials, eventually learn from the notebook that was found with the body what exactly transpired that led to Gabby's death.
Well, but it would be his version and there's no questioning of it, right? So you could write whatever you wanted down in the book. I have some kind of like points of the story where I'm like, I think that maybe there should be more discussion with the family and particularly with the attorney as to whether or not everything was on the up and up, because I understand you have client attorney privilege, but the family didn't let the police come in and have a conversation with him. There was a couple of days there that were kind of wonky in terms of them being like, oh yeah, by the way, we haven't talked to Brian. He's missing. Where I feel like there was the possibility they were covering for him.
Or believed that they were covering for him while he was already dead.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah. But just in that there was that period of time where the family didn't let the cops know. It was a 2 or 3 day period where they hadn't talked to him. And that to me seems like a very, very important piece that you would let law enforcement know. Unless there was some sort of, I don't know if it's collusion or panicking or trying to give your kid a head start. I don't know.
Well, and his family's going to have to answer for that. One way or another, they're going to have to answer for that. The fact that he took his own life, that's a level of guilt. That's a level of recognition of criminal liability. Somewhere in there, Brian Laundry knew what he did and either couldn't live with what he had done or couldn't live with the consequences. I think that this guy put his family in a terrible position after he did a terrible thing. But if that diary or that notebook, whatever it was, the journal that was recovered with his body, if that includes an explanation that arrives at a conclusion that, and I can't live with what I have done, or I can't go to jail, I can't live in a cage. Does that last confession, does that moment before I take my own life, because that's whatever the specific motive is, the grief over the thing that the death of Gabby, or the fear over the consequences for having caused the death of Gabby, the decision to end your own life that's a significant choice in either case. That's a big thing emotionally. Will you take his explanation, should it exist? Would you take it at face value?
I think that basically you get to just decide if you want to believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I think if there is not remorse, but accountability in that explanation, then there could be something that's somewhat maybe healing from it, from a really just horrible story all the way around. Although I feel like that's giving benefit of the doubt to a person who appears to have killed his partner and then let her family go on searching for her. And there was some stuff in there that might have been like him covering up for the fact that she had been dead, like with the text messages and stuff. So there's this part of me that goes, if he had this type of self-serving behavior and violent behavior up until this point, why all of a sudden would he become noble in his own self-inflicted demise? So I guess I just don't have that much faith in him. But here's the thing where I go back and forth on, because there's the part of me that would want to see like him be held accountable for his actions and possibly, you know, face at the time her parents for this horrible stuff he did. Was this a way that we just cut to the chase of, you know, they're not going to kill him because of death penalty, like that's not going to happen, so at least you're not spending the money? Or is this the guy that in his last act decided he wasn't going to take responsibility for his action?
That extended period between when Gabby died and when Brian killed himself. We are all capable of doing bad stuff. All of us have some memory that we're not proud of, something we did that was wrong, that we knew was wrong, that we did anyways. And some of us made amends, paid reparations, apologized, whatever the appropriate ninth step activity was in regards to those bad choices. I've done stuff that I'm not proud of, and I have hurt people that I care about. And if and whenever possible and appropriate, I've tried to apologize for that. I've tried to make up for that, sometimes more successfully than others. I know that I'm capable of making some of those mistakes again. I don't want to, and I try to steer away from being a bad guy, but it's conceivable. There is such a tremendous gulf between getting into a fight with a buddy over a girl and killing a buddy over a girl. There's such a, yeah, such a difference. I mean, I'm really thinking specifically of a dear friend of mine, somebody I'm still very close to. And he and I, a million years ago, got into it over a chick. And she's fine and she's off and she's living her life and she's married and happy and everybody's okay. We're all living our lives now. But he and I came to blows over it. Obviously, we've recovered because we're still friends. But there is such a distance between throwing a punch or slapping somebody and killing them in terms of the emotional impact of that choice. You can get mad and hit somebody and mean it and feel it and stick with it for a while. As soon as you cross that other line haven't you entered into new territory psychologically?
I would think so. And there's no going back from it. I also think, too, that, yeah, I don't know that he was thinking about other people when he was thinking about trying to cover for himself either, because I just remember seeing the footage, the news, and thinking, like, how heartbroken I would be if I didn't know where my kid was.
Yeah.
And he did that. He kept that family up in the air for months.
Yeah.
If we talk about from when she first disappeared to when they found, and they didn't find her because he was helpful.
Yeah.
They found her because we mobilized a bunch of resources to be able to find Gabby Petito. And I just think of the subsequent pain that took place because there wasn't this accountability or self-accountability for it. And then going back to his family, you know, I can see they were just protecting their kid, right? Or maybe he wasn't truthful with them. But there were a couple of days in there where I feel like, whether he was dead or not, they were not being forthcoming with law enforcement that was looking for him. I mean, because you're not going to talk a guy out of killing himself. His parents may have known that he was going to do it. What else are the options? I guess.
Can a 23-year-old man, after having done something so terrible, I mean, this guy was a knucklehead, and there was rumors that he was a little rough with Gabby, stuff like that. But that's, again, that's miles and miles away from taking a human life. Can a 23-year-old knucklehead do something terrible, take a human life, panic, try to cover his own butt, and then ultimately come to the conclusion that he has no choice and be sincerely contrite even as he chooses to escape the future consequences?
Yeah, I think so. I think that because there's a difference. I think there's a difference between suicide ideation and suicidality because you're depressed versus weighing your options and going, well, this seems to be the answer, because I wouldn't put them into the same category. Now, maybe he was suffering from grief based on, you know, the repercussions of his actions. We'll never know. And again, going back to his journal, that's going to be his side of the story, and there's going to be no fact checking.
That, I think, is unfortunately the truth of it. If that information even exists, if that right. that narrative was ever committed to paper. When we get back, another story, another opportunity for contrition, and a 16-year-old girl staring down the barrel of life in prison after murdering a man alleged to have sex trafficked her as a child.
It's a new era in News Talk, only on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
This is the Afternoon Drive. Thank you for joining us. You can follow us not just on your AM and FM dial, but also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And we are on Twitch TV. Oh, and on our social media, we're giving you the updates on how long the line is getting at the Honey Baked Ham Store. Boy, oh boy, if you don't have your ham figured out, you're going to be up a creek without a paddle coming up on Thursday. All right, so we're going to get into a heavier kind of topic that we talked about yesterday. I'd brought up this case, Crystal Kizer, in relation to the Kyle Rittenhouse case and him being exonerated of all the charges, found not guilty because of self-defense. And that case is actually causing a ripple effect, specifically amongst prosecuted cases in Kenosha, Wisconsin, And I think that that's where you and I were talking about the issue of race, not in that somebody went out and killed people a different color than them, but where the race piece comes into play in the legal system. And I brought up Crystal Kizer, who, when she was 16, got involved in a relationship which turned into sex trafficking.
Yeah, what happened to this girl is it's a terrible story. She was 16 years old. She met a man named Randy Voller, and Voller sexually abused Crystal multiple times. He also filmed it. It turns out that she was not the only one. And back in February of 2018, police arrested him on charges including child sexual assault. And then they released him without bail.
Yeah. So Voller, and again, if we're going to talk about kind of the race pieces here, Crystal, black young female, Voller, a white man, remained free for 3 months, even after police discovered evidence that he was abusing about a dozen underage black girls.
So,
and he remained free until Crystal showed up.
Showed back up, really.
Yes.
When she was 17 years old, she went to his house one night in June. Allegedly, she shot him in the head twice, lit his body on fire, and then fled in his BMW. A few days later, Crystal confessed to the murder. The district attorney, Michael Gravely, whose office obviously knew about the evidence against Voller in regards to child sexual abuse, charged Crystal with arson and first-degree intentional homicide, which in Wisconsin carries a mandatory life sentence.
Now, the district attorney, Michael Gravely, said that he believed Crystal's crime was premeditated and that the evidence shows she planned to murder him so she could steal his BMW.
Now, this is where we start to get into some really convoluted threads that can be a little bit tricky to follow. She did take his BMW. And she did talk about killing him. This was not something that had not crossed her mind. This was not something that she had never spoken of. But on the other hand, in Wisconsin and under federal law, all children who are bought or sold for sex, which Voller did both over the course of his involvement with Crystal, children who are bought or sold for sex are trafficking victims, regardless of the circumstances. And most states, including Wisconsin, have laws on the books that give sex trafficking victims an affirmative defense, which means that if they can prove that they committed a crime because they were being trafficked, they can be acquitted of certain charges.
Wisconsin is one of those states, and Crystal wanted to use that law to defend her actions. But despite prosecutors' certainty that her crime was premeditated, her lawyer argues she still has a complete defense to the charges.
So the affirmative defense has not been used as a defense against a homicide charge or any other violent crime in Wisconsin. This judge came to the conclusion that they were going to have to go to trial on this, that it was not going to be an automatic. In other words, it's not an affirmative defense for homicide. Now, I don't know, and at this point, we haven't read any judicial decisions, but I suspect that the complication here is that Crystal posted on social media. At one point, posting a photo of herself the morning of the murder in Voller's home with the caption, "My mugshot."
Yeah. Which goes back to, is this premeditated? Right? Now, 3 days later, she live streamed on Facebook. And she talked about giving her brother a BMW. Mm-hmm. She showed off her gun. And she told her 20-year-old boyfriend, "I don't want to shoot anybody else." Mm-hmm. The next day, cops show up. And she was arrested. Her bail was set in $1 million.
So when we get back, we're going to pick a little of this apart. Because there is, in my mind, there is no argument. This child is a victim, and she is a child. She is a 17-year-old minor child, and there's no argument that she's a victim. Included in the evidence, in the possession of the district attorney currently prosecuting her are video and photographs of Voller raping her because she is beneath the age of consent. So therefore it is child rape. And that include that he has that evidence. In the course of discovery, her defense team has come into possession of that evidence. There's a lot to unpack here, but this is an interesting thing because you have the Rittenhouse case, which bears almost no resemblance to this. Other than you have two 17-year-olds both being accused of homicide and both offering self-defense defenses, there's very little in common, and yet the decision with Rittenhouse may carry through to possibly assist Crystal's defense. We'll talk about it when we get back. News 10 now, Jim.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
This is the Afternoon Drive Podcast with Philip and Skip from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
436, News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ. It's Skip Echeverria. I'm Philip Teresi. Talking about this, another case out of Kenosha, Wisconsin, a murder or a homicide, I guess, depending upon the ins and outs of the legal vernacular, 17-year-old and a self-defense argument. But in this case, we have a 17-year-old black girl who shot her sexual abuser twice in the head, then set him on fire before taking off from his house with his BMW.
And so the prosecutors really went after the fact that she killed him and then wanted his BMW.
Yeah.
They ignored the part on the books in Wisconsin, along with 29 other states and the District of Columbia, that talks about you have to take into account if a person, particularly a child, is the victim of sex trafficking, which this girl was, that you have to take that into account when it comes to the case and charges. That was thrown out the window. By the way, there was also, I think, an important piece of this with the guy that was targeted here. There was an ongoing investigation about him perpetuating sex crimes and filming it against multiple young black girls. And there was even a call that was made previous to, obviously, to him getting killed back in February 2018, where a 15-year-old called because she had said that he had given her drugs and he was going to kill her.
By the way, that girl was found by officers wandering the streets wearing a bra under an unzipped jacket and dilated pupils, having been dosed with LSD.
Yeah, she had met him and he had offered to pay for sex. The first time that they met, she was 14. He was a dirt bag pig. And the police knew it because the police in the prosecutor's office knew it because they had plenty of proof. He provided the proof. Yet we go back to Crystal Kizer, and she is the one who is actually now benefiting from the ruling that came from Rittenhouse in a reevaluation of her case in the argument of self-defense.
I want to be very careful because this is not a story that I want to play devil's advocate with, but there's questions that are naturally going to arise. This was a 16-year-old girl who was advertising herself for prostitution services on Backpage.com. That's how her and Voller became connected. She's beneath the age of consent, so the fact that she was doing that isn't relevant to the fact that Randall Voller is a child rapist. Repeated child rapist. Although she is not of the age of consent, because she was in that situation of her own volition, does that, for a random group of 12 human beings sitting on a jury in a town that is 77% white, 10% black, and all poor, does the fact that she initiated this Backpage.com ad that got Voehler's attention, does that have the potential to diminish a claim of self-defense despite everything that transpired and the obvious illegality of it from that point forward?
Possibly, especially if you have a jury that is not going to dig into understanding the multiple things that lead to somebody getting involved in prostitution. Kids don't prostitute themselves because it's fun or because they feel like they have any safety otherwise. So I think that that's an important piece to understand from a trauma perspective. I also think that it's important to recognize that Voehler was given preferential treatment because when you dig into this, a veteran sex crime prosecutor in Wisconsin balked at the fact that he was arrested. They searched his home. They confiscated laptops, hard drives, memory cards, women's clothing. He was charged with enough felony charges that could have been punishable up to 40 years in state prison. And if he had been somebody who had any money, the going rate of bail would have been about $100,000. You add in the video evidence, and this veteran sex crimes prosecutor in Wisconsin called it a dream for prosecutors. Instead, police released him with no bail and said he would be summoned to court, and he was never summoned to court.
Voehler spent a boatload of money on criminal defense attorneys, but it was 3 months before the district attorney's office even received the case file. The case file showed what was found in Voehler's house: hundreds of child porn videos, some of them featuring girls who appear to be as young as 12 years old, and at least 20 home videos of Voehler with underage black girls. He wasn't taken into custody. No sex crime case was put into the Wisconsin court system. 12 days later, one of those girls killed him.
Right. And by the way, even though he lived in this weird, like, cramped one bedroom, 360 square foot house, he actually had money. Apparently he was spending that to entice young women and to use them to any way he saw fit, because he had about $800,000 in assets. And so when we go back to the reason why I brought this up in the case of Rittenhouse, Rittenhouse's acquittal based on self-defense, and when we talk about that in terms of maybe he got a jury that understood the self-defense because he was the defendant he was, soft, young, white, clean cut, crying on the stand, he didn't have to work an uphill battle in order to get that jury to believe him. Whereas you have Crystal Kaiser, young, black, 15, 16 at the time that this started, and the attention paid to, oh, she killed him because she wanted the BMW. When you have tons of information there that shows not only what happens in these exploitative types of relationships, but a man who was a pedophile, a absolute scum of the earth type person that you and I have talked about, that, like, just put him on an island or whatever, because who knows what you're going to do with this. But he perpetrated on kids that people wouldn't necessarily pay attention to, or, you know, that would make choices like putting something up online afterwards to kind of brag about it or whatnot. And he got away with it, and he even got arrested and got let go. So when people talk about the system and taking a look at the issues of race and when it does play a role or when it doesn't, I think that this is, in this case, Crystal Kaiser is going to get another look because of some of the repercussions of Rittenhouse in Kenosha, Wisconsin. But oh boy, that prosecutor's office, man. Just quit now. Quit now because you failed. And now you're getting called to the carpet on it.
It's... The failure in regards to prosecuting and charging Voehler is absolutely staggering. And again, I want to make it really clear. This is not a story I want to play devil's advocate with at all. But again, there are questions that are going to be raised in front of the jury and in the court of public opinion. There's no argument. This child is a victim of a sexual predator. There is no argument that this child was failed by everybody who should have cared for her. The reason she was on Backpage.com that she gives to the police as all of this starts to unravel was she needed money for food and school notebooks. She was prostituting herself for school supplies.
Yeah. Which is the reality for a lot of kids in that situation. It's heartbreaking. Yep.
So this kid's a victim in every conceivable way, by any reasonable metric. And she's failed by everybody who should have been caring for her and looking out for her. There's no argument about any of that. This affirmative defense has never been used with something like a homicide. This victim of sex trafficking affirmative defense. But there's no argument that in a different context, in a different situation, this child would not have been charged with any crime. But she did go and shoot him, set his body on fire to hide evidence, and take off with his car. And she went on social media to talk about it. Now, is it a little shoulder shake, a little whistling past the graveyard? I'm not scared and I'm not going to be a victim anymore.
Probably some.
I don't have a problem swallowing that. I can accept that. At the time that she shot him, is there evidence that he was attempting to do something, sexually assaulting her, holding her captive, trying to kill her? Was he doing anything that under a different circumstance could be argued that she was acting in self-defense?
Her argument is yes, that she went over there and was not intending to have sex and that he was forcing it. And so then that gets into, again, you can't give consent because you're too young. But in that moment, just because you've had those experiences, you don't just get to demand it from a person because you feel like it. So yes, there is that point of it. But it's going to go back to the story of her side of the story versus he's dead. But while we haven't seen this type of review in Wisconsin with the issue of homicide, we have seen some reevaluations of sentences. Cetonia Brown is the story that comes to mind from Tennessee. She was 16 when she went to prison, served 15 years for killing a man who purchased her for sex. And I think that this is we're starting to wrap our head around how maybe the justice system doesn't work out the way it's supposed to for some versus others. And in particular, what I was going to say is this is the amazing work that Breaking the Chains does locally. That deals with victims of sex trafficking. I mean, Mayor Dyer was a big part of the establishment of that. If we're really talking about protecting people from sex trafficking, children especially, it gets a little messy because there are other crimes involved.
I've got my heart breaks for this kid. She's been failed by everybody. She was put into an impossible situation and she's being dehumanized by a system that's not doing its job and looking out for her as a victim. She acknowledges that she shot and killed the guy, that she set him on fire and that she took off with the car. She's damaged by her life's experiences. Should she be, rather than incarcerated, rather than being sent to prison as a penalty, should she be put into some kind of therapy, some kind of psychological,
absolutely,
real, true, we've got to teach you how to be people rehabilitation?
Absolutely. And that's what programs like Breaking the Chains do.
But in this case, you've got this criminal element to it. Does that become a court order that you're going to go to a state facility and you're going to have therapy all day, every day for a while, kid?
There is treatment that could be successful here. But first, she needs to be unplugged from that. You stole the BMW and you did all this for the BMW. It's way more than the BMW.
Inarguably, it is way more than a BMW.
Coming up after 5 o'clock, we've got your trending topics for the day. Also, another check-in with news and traffic as your drive home gets started. Now, thank you for sticking around for the afternoon drive here with Philip and myself. I'm Skip High. That was some heavy stuff that we just covered with the Crystal Kizer case. It's interesting reading. You want to get into it and kind of follow along with some of the ripple effects of the Rittenhouse verdict that came out late last week. So let's lighten it up a little bit. Lighten it up a little and turn our attention to Florida, where we're going to pick on them for just a minute.
Is this Florida or is this an HOA?
Well, that's the thing. See, we can't make fun of Florida because that leads to a ruckus that we saw in Rockland, but we can point to HOAs. For now, HOAs are still a universal threat to our freedoms. So this family just wanted to put up their Christmas lights. Not just Christmas lights, they had a light up menorah.
Yeah, they went all out.
Yeah, they're being inclusive of the holidays because there are several between now and Christmas time, mm-hmm, or the beginning of the year. But Philip, they weren't having it. The HOA wasn't having it. They could face up to $1,000 in fines.
Yeah, and they should.
Is this what would have happened if I'd have decorated last weekend?
Yes.
Oh, man, now I should have come in and just done it. Been like, I don't know who did it, Philip. Who are you going to find?
When you buy into a homeowners association, you agree to abide by certain rules. And if this was a question of having hung the lights versus having turned on the lights, I would say if they simply had everything in place and ready, no problem. But they insisted on turning the lights on.
Oh, but see, listen here, Scrooge McDuck. The family just wanted to be able to celebrate the holidays, and they needed a light decorator. And the light decorator was booked. So the only date available was November 6th.
Then you should have left them off. Should have left them off. Hang the lights. If they weren't turning on the display, I would say the HOA needs to chill out and back off. But you don't get to go bougie on me twice with a paid light hanger and living inside of an HOA community, and then cry when you break rules and get called out for it.
But, I mean, first of all, it is Florida, so it doesn't count. And secondly, Mariah Carey, the Queen of Christmas, came to their defense on Twitter and said, my personal preference is to wait until Thanksgiving, but there's no regulating festiveness.
Unless you live in an HOA.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.